Welcome to the Penny and Pops podcast. He's Spencer Penny Strode. I'm Adam Pops Papa Giorgio. There is a spirit in Orlando and a magic in our town. It's a 2-2 series as the Magic win these past two home games by 30-plus points each. And now the pressure is back on Cleveland to hold serve for Game 5. But this young Magic team is just doing things it hasn't done in over a dozen years. Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, they're breaking NBA records one game at a time. And it's been a very fun past few days. Now we'll see if the Magic can get greedy and take Game 5 from the Cavs. We can break Cleveland's spirit. We definitely can. There's that breaking point mentally for them from a limit perspective, and we can push beyond that. Let's go.
Hardaway, straight down the lane, the power jam. Point guard on a 7-6 stack. Here's Lewis turning and he shoots. Yes! With four and 1 10 seconds.
Here's Turkaloo for the win.
We're recording this Sunday night, April 28th. It's amazing what happens when you play some home games. We have a 2-2 playoff series, Penny. It's the Magic. They held serve at home, and now we have a game Tuesday in Cleveland for Game 5. Before we talk about Games 3 and 4, let's talk about some of the awards that have been kind of handed out stuff that the Magic been nominated for. So, we're recording this just as we found out that Oklahoma City's Mark Daigneault just had won NBA Coach of the Year. Jamal Mosley finished a distant second, but it's a hell of a, I guess, an honor and a nomination to finish second. Chris Finch for the Wolves finished third. We knew going in that Daigneault was gonna win the award. I think Oklahoma City improved by the same amount of wins that we did. I think 17 games. And you know, in OKC's case, they were the number one seed in the West, and it was very tough to think Mosley had a shot to win it. But I did think he'd finish second, and he did finish second. What do you think, Penny?
Yeah, great call by you. Again, just further testament, obviously, to the year the Magic had, and again, all accounts, he's beloved by the players. The proof is in the team's record and the continued ascent of the organization. So well deserved by Mosley, and also OKC, equally bright future and you know, even a better year over in the Western Conference. So pretty good 1-2 punch there.
Yeah, look, they're kicking the Pelicans' ass right now in the playoffs. I think they play the winner of Dallas Clippers next round. So that gets much more interesting for them. But yeah, I mean, look, Mosley's got a better personality than Daigneault. So that kind of helps from our perspective. But it's still a good honor to finish runner up. Jalen Suggs earlier last week, he finished eighth in most improved player voting. He got 2 second place votes, 5 third place votes. Tyrese Maxey barely beat out Coby White for the MIP award. I think White should have won. I've always believed that players in their first 3 years in the league shouldn't be eligible for this award. And yeah, I mean, cool to see Suggs get votes for that. I don't know. What's your viewpoint on the MIP voting, Penny?
Yeah, I mean, look, Jalen Suggs' improvement, I think, is, I don't know if anyone expected him to be the third best player on the team this season, and his improvement specifically from beyond the arc, but also, you know, he's always been a great defender. I think he's even improved on that end this year too. So his play is the reason the Magic are where they are this year. And that being said, Tyrese Maxey has become a superstar. So it's hard to argue, in my opinion, him winning that award, but it's always nice to get recognition, even, you know, if you're a little bit further down the list for Jalen, and well-deserved, I think.
Yeah, look, Suggs finally had one healthy offseason, and he went from being viewed as a bust of a fifth pick to here he is now being part of essentially a core three with him, Paolo, and Franz. So that's kind of all you need to know with how his year went there without even looking at the stats. But I mean, he's a defensive beast, and we don't know. He's going to make an all defensive team, whether that's first or second. It's tough to know. It might be closer to a second, but either way, he fully deserves to be recognized as a top 10 defender, and he's got that 3-point shooting going for him. I mean, that improvement in 3-point shooting was immense for him. And like I said, all he needed was a healthy offseason. And it'd be great if, whenever our offseason comes, if he was also healthy for another offseason. Because who knows how much better he might get even then. So, Jonathan Isaac got a third place vote and finished ninth for sixth man of the year, which I believe that vote came from John Hollinger, who is taking a massive dump on this Cavs Magic series, and he can go fuck himself. Because it's ridiculous. If you don't like it, just don't fucking watch it, man. But you know, he's already ripping about how Magic Cavs game six, which it's def there's definitely gonna be a game six one way or another, no matter what happens Tuesday. Game six Friday, that's coming up, might be the only game that happens. Which I doubt that's going to end up happening. But I can't, I could be wrong, but yeah, I mean, he's just taking a massive dump on the series, and if you don't care for it, don't watch it. But he keeps tripling down on these awful Magic takes because he's had horrendous Magic takes all season, and he keeps fucking bankrupting himself with these awful takes. Naz Reid won Sixth Man of the Year over Malik Monk by two first place votes. It was a super tight two-man race, really. And Naz Reid is the third undrafted player to ever win Sixth Man of the Year award, joining 1999 lockout year and also MIP Darrell Armstrong. And then a few years before that, it was John Starks of the Knicks. So interesting that Isaac got lobbed that. I didn't even think he was eligible to be a Sixth Man of the Year candidate, so I don't know how that happened. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, thoughts on Hollinger? We don't even have to talk about the Isaac vote because it was a little weird. Because look, if Isaac had played, you know, 65 games, he would be first team all defense. But that's something, I guess, for him to strive for potentially from a health and minutes perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is like you're taking into account for this award the season that the Timberwolves had, pretty good and comparatively better than Sacramento. So no qualms there. And Isaac should get some sort of recognition for the impact that he had and for his standards, the durability this year. But as a resident curmudgeon here, the John Hollinger kind of continued slide into elitist asshole is not as entertaining, especially when it's behind the Athletic paywall too. It's easier to skip sometimes.
Very easy to skip. All right, one other quick thing before we get into games three and four. So the Magic Downtown Entertainment Complex has a name now. It's going to be called
Ugh.
West Court. West Court. I don't know who came up with that. It sounds like I'm being sold a timeshare. It's not great. It's very similar to like Westgate Resorts and just other things titled around here. And I would just hope that they kind of changed their mind on the name. But yeah. Any thoughts before we get into game three, Penny?
I agree with you. It sounds like another Camden housing location or property, but
Camden
I
actually
guess that
sounds better, at least.
at least there's I mean, court in the name, it's basketball adjacent. I don't know.
I mean, but west, it's not west of the arena. It's north of the arena. It's east of the practice facility. It's west of I-4. I guess that's what they were going for on that, maybe. All right, here we go. So you and I were on a bachelor party in Clearwater for both games three and four. We did watch both games three and four. So we got to see two immense 30-point plus victories to the pleasant surprise of basically everybody. So yeah, with game three, everyone was healthy for the Magic, including Jalen Suggs, who obviously after game two, we thought, maybe there was some doubt for game three, but nope, he was good. Everybody was good for us. You know, the morning of that Thursday game, ESPN dropped this outstanding Tyler Tynes piece on Paolo Banchero, which covered just a lot of ground over the past 2 years, and it kind of set the stage for what would be an insanely awesome Paolo Banchero game. And we had not won a home playoff game since 2011. It had been over a dozen years. I thought we were due. We got the Scott Foster, Curtis Blair officiating crew, which I was actually glad to see because Scott Foster is known as the extender. And if the Magic played at all decently, we were winning this game 3. I was very fully confident of it. We even got Paul Porter. He called he ditched the Lightning and called the Magic game instead. And, you know, the Lightning did lose that game 3, and the Magic ended up winning this game 3. So he picked the right game to go to anyway. So the Magic, they switched up the starting lineup. They started Wendell, Paolo, Franz, Gary, and Suggs, which I did not like going in. I didn't think Wendell deserved the start. I'm very happy to eat crow based off of the results. I still have my concerns with Wendell starting overall the rest of the series, but it's working, and clearly they're not going to give Goga the minutes, so it's I just have to eat this. But, I mean, Penny, there wasn't a surprise that the lineup was going to be changed. It's just a matter of what was going to get changed, right?
Yeah, we talked about this in the last episode. I wasn't sure that they'd go to a change in the starting lineup. I thought it might be more of a rotational change, but I did think that more Wendell could be the answer. And I think it's even less about Wendell and more about trying to maximize what you're getting out of Jonathan Isaac. So the start of game 3 wasn't great, but we really can't argue with the results as we sit here after a 2-2 series.
The Magic also finally created Kapaya shirts for Jeff Turner's go-to catchphrase for, what, 20-plus years now? 25 years now? And, yeah, I mean, it really only took a dozen years in the making because, I mean, Jeff did all those years on radio, and now he's done, like, a dozen years of TV. It's been a dozen years since we had Matty Gukas, I think. So, you know, it's nice that they finally made those. I'd be curious to know how much they're going for cost-wise. It might be something that we look into later on this week when we go to game 6. But, you pointed out the shirt before I did. But, I mean, this was a long time coming for there to be a Kapaya shirt.
I think they're better than the Play the Song shirt that also is available now. And my one question is, does Jerry Reynolds get some sort of residual here as the originator of Kapaya?
He should, but he's not, probably. He probably doesn't even know about the shirts yet. Jeff will probably tell him next season. But, yeah. And then for this game 3, it looked like there were a good amount of empty seats because of how overpriced tickets were, and just resellers and scalpers were sitting on them. Like, I think it looked better in game 4 than it did in game 3 from that perspective. But, I mean, we mentioned it, that the tickets for these games 3 and 4 were like 3 or 4 times more expensive in many aspects than those Cavs games in Cleveland for games 1 and 2. So, but I mean, from a crowd energy, crowd noise perspective, you don't really notice it, but I don't know, it kind of irked me. What's your viewpoint on that?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, visually it did not look as impressive, obviously, as other arenas that we're able to see across the board for the playoffs. And I wonder, since the giveaway shirts are blue and the arena seats are blue, do you think that had anything to do with it? The energy was great by all accounts, but optically, again, looked a little more sparse than obviously other sold out arenas.
I mean, it looks better. I think it's better if the shirts can match the seats. Because in the old arena, we had that problem where like those red seats would really stand out, whether we were wearing white or blue shirts. You know, it's the big thing is making sure fans put the damn t-shirts on, and it's still not a high enough percentage of folks doing that to my liking. But yeah, like I said, I guess we'll see. We'll really know for sure. We'll see ourselves for game 6 when we go. But yeah, it looked better for game 4. We still have that problem where the start of the third quarter, there's just way too many people not in their seats in the lower bowl. They're either going to the restroom or getting food, drinks. It needs to be better going forward.
Including, by the way, the DeVos family in prime courtside seats that yes. can't even set the standard for the yes. rest of the fans, which was very frustrating for me in that game three.
Yeah. So you mentioned bad starts. The Magic had another bad start where no threes were dropping for us and we were down 6-0 early. And then Franz Wagner had a quick 6-point flurry. Jalen Suggs hit a three and we were only down 10-9. And yeah, this is the Paolo Banchero game, but Franz kind of opening the lid on the rim with like a 3-pointer and one really got us going there. And then Paolo hit a three to put us up 16-14. It was our first lead of the series. Funny to see now, like how much of a great net rating we have series wise, but the fact that at 16-14 in game three, that was our first lead of the series. It's, you know, it's something to just think about and glad to have that behind us. From the bench, Fultz, Isaac Moe came in the first period. Cole hit a late three to close the quarter, and we were up 31-21 after one. And that three kind of really, really got us, got the crowd going. And I mean, how are you feeling after that? We went from not leading at all to we're up double digits after a quarter.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you remember back to the first quarter, that Franz and Jalen and then Cole ended up being kind of the biggest barometer. Paolo got off to a very poor start.
Mm-hmm.
And you called it too. Obviously, you know, end of the first, start of the second was really where the game was won by the Magic, and credit, I think, the bench lineup that basically set the table for Paolo to go do Paolo things, thereafter.
Yeah. You and I both agreed that Paolo or Franz, at least one of them had to be on the floor at all times, and Mosley did not do that. Magic went with a full bench lineup to open the second. It was Mo, J.I., Ingles, Cole, and Fultz. But as you mentioned, having J.I. coming off the bench, it really just anchors everything down because, one, it helps Mo and Joe immensely. I mean, J.I. just covers for everybody. Like, that's not a great defensive lineup, having Mo, Joe, and Cole all out there. Fultz, when he's focused, can defend pretty damn well, but J.I. he covers so much, and you're right. It's not necessarily all about Wendell starting games. It's that you're maximizing Isaac's impact for him with him coming off the bench. And it's worked out these last two games. You had a J.I. steal and a fast break two-hand hammer dunk that put us up 41-26. The Magic went up 50-34 after Paolo picked Donovan Mitchell's pocket and Suggs hit an elbow three with 5:17 to go until halftime. I mean, we're cruising up 16 at that point. J.I. hit his second three of the period, and then the Magic went up by 21. Cavs kind of chipped away a little bit. The Magic were up 61-45 at halftime. Paolo was up to 19 points. He hit some ridiculously hard shots. There's that one turnaround jumper where basically he, like, Dirk one-leg thrusts Mobley and still scores over him. That was nasty. I don't know how he did that. But yeah, I mean, we're up 16 at halftime. Paolo had 19, but he also had the three fouls, so you had to keep an eye on that foul trouble-wise. We had 12 points from Franz, 11 for Suggs. No Cleveland Cavalier had more than 10 points. The Cavs were 3 of 18 on threes. Magic, 8 of 21 at the half. And the Magic, they held advantages in rebounds, turnovers, fast break points, and second chance points. And when you're doing all that, you're likely winning, and we definitely were. We had Vooch and Tracy McGrady both at this game three and again at game four. That's cool to see. You know, Vooch, even though he's a Bull, he still has his house here. He lives here. He spends a lot of time here with his family in the off season. How are we feeling at halftime at this point, Penny? I mean, we're up 16. Like, it's Paolo's getting it going after the slow start. It's pretty great, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're feeling pretty confident, and obviously 8 out of 21 is, you know, from behind the three-point line is good, but it's not like unsustainable great, especially after the just woeful shooting in the first two games. So the biggest thing that you pointed out is the rebounding was so much improved in game three, especially in the first half, and keeping the turnovers down. Obviously, you know, we'll talk about the second half too, but the big key there is Paolo taking care of the ball as well.
Yeah, Paolo, he still wasn't having an efficient shooting game when the second half started, but he was just super aggressive. And that's all I give a shit about, really, like, because he's getting double and triple teamed. In that Tynes article, he kind of talks about how he felt extra validation when he got super high praise from Kevin Durant and Carmelo Anthony. And those are two guys who early on in their careers, especially Kevin Durant, were not efficient players, but over time, they got a lot better at it. Now, obviously, you'd prefer Paolo to be more of a Durant than Melo overall as a player, but it's I don't give a shit about his efficiency. Like, there's all these fucking analytic, like, bigwigs out there that they, you know, they only look at the analytic numbers and look and then just say, oh, Paolo's not that great, whatever. You know, I'll take Jalen Williams or Chet Holmgren, and I just can tell them just shove it because I don't give a shit. I mean, this guy's getting double and triple teamed all the time. He's a superstar, and you guys just keep hiding behind your spreadsheets because I know what I'm seeing right here, right now, and I'm seeing basically prime Tracy McGrady in a different package who is doing stuff that we haven't seen since either LeBron James or Magic Johnson. Like, it's just insane shit time after time. But yeah, Paolo, he hit a three early on in the third period to put us up 21 again. Suggs had that blow-by drive right in front of the Cavs bench of Evan Mobley and finished with a layup that put us up 72-49, 3 minutes into the third period. Paolo continued to hit just these enormous big boy shots in this game. And then you had a Suggs fast break finish, which saw us up 80-56 midway through the third. Paolo just kept turning it on. He made it 88-56. He was at that point at 29-10. So he's doing this in barely three quarters of action. Is he doing all this stuff? Suggs was up to 22 points. Suggs then had a windmill dunk, we'll call it, that made it 92-58. And the Magic were up 96-61 entering the fourth. This game is essentially over at, you know, being up 96-61 entering the final period. And yeah, Paolo and the rest of the starters, they sat out the entire fourth period, which that's a pretty nice luxury to have. We were up 100-64 with 9:36 to go. It was the first time in the series either team had reached 100 points, and we just wrecked Cleveland. We just fucked them up in this game three, and we rolled to an easy win. Jet Howard, I think, got some garbage time minutes in this game three. He had like 5 points, which was two more than Darius Garland. You know, Anthony Black played, but he didn't score, but Black would score in game four. So our rookies are getting on the board there. Yeah, Paolo became the youngest player in over 40 seasons. So not since Magic Johnson in his first NBA finals, where Paolo had 30 points, 30 plus points, 10 plus rebounds, zero turnovers in a playoff game. Like, again, consistently, he's doing stuff that we haven't seen since either LeBron or Magic. It's pretty fucking absurd. Anthony Black and Jet Howard, as I mentioned, they got to make their playoff debuts in this game. And yeah, it was a 121-83 win. It's the third largest playoff victory in franchise history. The 38 points is the biggest playoff loss in Cavs history, which you and I were kind of surprised by that, considering how dismal and lengthy Cleveland's kind of playoff history is. The fact that we've handed them their worst loss ever. And then this is the largest win by a team that trailed a series 0-2 entering a game three in NBA history, which that's kind of exciting from a momentum building perspective. And this is the list of the youngest players to have 30, 10, and 5 assists in a playoff game. It's Magic Johnson at 20 years old. It's LeBron James, who was 52, who did 52 days sooner than Paolo Banchero did age-wise. Banchero himself at 21 years and 165 days of age. And Luka Doncic, 12 days after Paolo did, 12 days older than Paolo did. So that's a hell of a list. It's Magic, LeBron, Paolo, and Luka. Thoughts on game three, Penny? How we finished it?
Yeah. So the biggest thought is immediately, okay, we've avoided a sweep.
And it's not a douchebag sweep either.
Right. And the second thing I think, again, as we mentioned before the series started, was the importance of getting that playoff home win. Like if you're going to win one game, at least get one at home. The biggest takeaway here to me, obviously, this is the Paolo Banchero game. And over the last two seasons and the regular season, I think there's a couple games that stand out, like New Orleans and Detroit and things where there's he goes, okay, everyone hop on my back. But in this particular game, I think what you're seeing is a snapshot of what he can be at his absolute best, which is overflowing with confidence to take these ridiculous, contested, basically, terrible shots for anybody other than him, who for the rest of his career, because of his skill, his work ethic, and also his length and size, to be able to create enough space to shoot over the top or get, a little bit of separation with the big body. Like when he's feeling it in that way, you cannot stop him at all, in the same way that you can't stop a Durant who's going to shoot over the top of you no matter what. So that was the most exciting thing, and for him to be able to do it on the, in the playoffs on the national level is great. But then, you're here, you're down 2-1, you've won a game in the series. The next concern or thought is, okay, you don't see it a lot as much in the NBA as you used to, but the old school gentleman sweep, where the lower seeded team wins that game three at home and then is still bounced out in five games. And we talked about in 2008, in the second round, the Magic beat Detroit at home by 25 plus and still got, gentlemen sweeped out of the second round of the playoffs. So is there enough momentum coming out of this game three to continue to build and take it into game four?
I mean, you mentioned it perfectly. It's one of those where, all right, you kicked ass in game three. Are you gonna kind of sit on your laurels and just expect that you're gonna win game four? Or are you gonna do kind of the same thing effort-wise to where you're just gonna smother the living shit out of Cleveland and suffocate them and take this game four and equal the series? And well, we got the right answer for that game four.
Are you nervous coming out of game three with essentially a 40-point win, as opposed to say, 8-point win that, Cleveland's pissed, right? Like they got decidedly embarrassed. What's your level of nervousness coming out of that for the Cleveland counterpunch?
I was surprisingly not that nervous. Like I was pretty confident. I know one of those Paolo buckets, he did the too small thing to Donovan Mitchell, and Donovan Mitchell kind of played oblivious to it in the post game interview, talking about how he didn't see it, but now that he did, he's like, "All right, let's see about next game." And even despite all that, I felt very confident that we would take game four. Like as long as we brought the effort, it was gonna happen. Now I didn't think we would win game four almost as easily as we did game three. I thought that one was going to be more of a dogfight. So, yeah. So that Thursday game for game three was NBA TV and Bally Sports. Friday was Mo Wagner's 27th birthday. Happy birthday, Mo. Saturday, game four. This was a TNT game, and also on Bally Sports. Downtown Orlando was busy with this one. You had the 1 o'clock tip for us. Orlando City had a big home match at 7:30, which they choked away against Toronto. They lost 2-1. They gave up goals in the 87th and 90th minute. So that was a disappointing loss. The Solar Bears had then the 9 p.m. game. So after the Magic Cavs game four, Solar Bears had their game four at 9. They lost to Greenville, so that series became 2-2. It was the same starting five for both teams. I thought maybe Max Strus would be sat for either a LeVert or a Okoro, but Bickerstaff kept it the same. We did not have Paul Porter for this game, and thankfully we didn't need him, but I'm assuming we're going to get Paul Porter for game six, assuming the Lightning get eliminated, which they should, hopefully. But yeah, we didn't have Paul Porter for this one. He saved the Lightning from being swept. So Paul got his one Magic win, and he's like, all right, I'm going to save the Lightning from getting swept, and he did. So now he can focus back on the Magic. Vucin and McGrady again. We're at the game, so they're 2-0 in the stands. So maybe I'd like to see them both there again for Game 6. Gus Johnson called the game for the TNT broadcast. He definitely takes a more conservative approach than he used to, but it's still Gus Johnson. Like he still gets it done. Enjoy David and Jeff while you get them for this first round, because we don't get them any longer if either we play on ABC or if we get to the second round. So enjoy David and Jeff while we have them calling Bally Sports calls for us locally. The commish, Adam Silver, was also in the building, so he saw a fun show. Maybe it'll inspire him to help the league schedule more Magic national TV games, which is bound to happen no matter what happens the rest of the postseason for us. The game starts, and I believe once again we went down 6-0, Penny. So Mitchell got off to a decent 8-point first quarter start, and I was a little scared. I was getting some Cleveland game 1 and 2 flashbacks there briefly. But Strews picked up a technical 3 minutes into the game. He was just bitching about a call, and the refs were like, nope, you're not getting away with that. So this one is going to be known as the Franz Wagner game, this game 4. You know, as great as Paolo was in game 3, Franz statistically had a better game 4. Franz, he saw Paolo wasn't able to do as much in game 4 early on, and Franz just kind of took over and was just spectacular in this. Like, Franz had 9 points in the first quarter. Late in the period, he shook the living fuck out of George Niang so bad that he just crumpled to the floor. And after Franz buried the bucket, Franz, the bench, our bench, the entire arena was literally pointing at Niang's ass, just disrespecting the hell out of him as he deserves, because Niang is not a great player. Dirty player. But, and then Franz did get a well-earned taunting technical. So we were down 23-22 after one because of the taunting technical, which honestly, that was worth it. Just to see all that, that was worth the taunting tech. But then, you know, we also in that first quarter got the help of an energetic Mo Wagner to keep it where it was that tight. Cause again, we didn't have a great start, but it ended up not being a bad start, only being down one after one quarter. Neither team had made a three yet in this game. I mean, Penny, in a situation where neither team's made threes, you prefer the Magic in that situation, right?
Yeah, you would feel you feel much more confident if Cleveland's also not making threes, because again, Magic still getting pretty decent looks, you know. But feel pretty good after one not shooting it straight to be within 1 point, and obviously we see Franz get that taunting technical. You know how he's feeling mentally. Like, you think that he's going to have a great game from there too.
So the second period saw Cleveland carve us up in the paint and get to the free throw line better than us, with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley not seeing much resistance at times. Like, Wendell got cooked pretty bad on a few of these. And this is the concern I have with Wendell, but it ended up not costing us in this game. And you know, we were down 60-51 at halftime. I'm pretty nervous being down 9 at halftime, seeing what Cleveland did to us in the paint. And just, yeah, I mean, it's something to keep an eye on for game 5 with Wendell. Mosley might have to adjust something there. But Fultz for us had 8 points off the bench. Isaac hit a couple threes for us. But we needed more from kind of that second unit, with our starters not generating offense other than Franz, basically. Like, Franz had 11 at the break. The next highest scoring starter was Suggs at 6. There's some nerves being down 9 at half, right, Penny?
Oh, I mean, a ton of nerves. And we have to give credit to Markel for making the tough mid-range Markel buckets to keep us within striking distance in the first half, as pretty much everyone else was, you know, shitting the bed. And we'll talk about the what can only be described as historic third quarter, second half in a minute. But the other thing, maybe based on just how things were rolling, but the Ingles minutes in the first half were not great either. And he may be playing himself into at least, if not a smaller role, then maybe no role as the series continues on. He did not get any second half minutes.
Yeah, I think he had like a bucket and two assists, but I don't need Joe to be spectacular. I just need Joe to not make a ton of mistakes and not get wrecked defensively. Here, not the greatest defensive game from him. He's had better, but it's okay if he doesn't see a lot of minutes. This team's good enough, and having a 9-man rotation is fine in that instance. But I mean, it was unnerving being down 9 because Mitchell was at 18 points, Jared Allen had 16, Evan Mobley 12, and then like you said, it's a historic third quarter that happened for us. Just unbelievable shit, honestly, because it was a 37-10 Magic third period. We opened the third on a 17-7 run that put us ahead 68-67 those first 5 minutes of the third. And poured it on from there. Like Cleveland gets 3 points the last 7 minutes of the third quarter. Just epic shit. Epic shit. Like it's insane. Suggs and Garland, they picked up double techs that energized the building immensely. We're up 68-67, and then Suggs and Garland have that face to face, and you can see it on the TV. Like everybody is getting up in Kia Center, and that energy, that tension just goes up another level. And from there, I felt like we just broke them because it's still tough to entirely process with all like the big time sequences that happen in that third. But that double tech moment was us not backing down, because then Wendell hits huge back-to-back threes. Like I shit on Wendell a lot, but what he does is he spreads the floor. He'll hit threes. Wendell hit just these massive back-to-back threes, and we go from up 68-67 to 74-67, and you went from down 9 to you're up 7 like that. And then you had that Isaac inbound steal where Niang, he just had a lazy bounce pass. I don't know what Niang was fucking thinking there, but Isaac steals the ball, kicks it out to Franz, who immediately kicks it back to Isaac to hit immediate three, and we're up 12 with 2 minutes left in the third. And it definitely, at that point, you're feeling that momentum has fully swung our way, and the game had just shifted our way. And on top of that, Franz has a 12-point third quarter, just casually throwing that in there. On top of that, that third period, we hit 6 of 10 on threes. We won second chance points 8-0, and that also included a J.I. putback dunk, which also just turned Kia Center into a party with that Isaac putback slam. And look, that 37-10 third period set a new franchise playoff record for most points in a third quarter and also for fewest points allowed in a third quarter. That 27-point difference is the third highest in NBA playoff history for a single quarter. So think about those Shaq teams, think about those Dwight teams, and it's this current team with all of its offensive flaws and inconsistencies that did this. Just I don't know what else you want to add to this third period, Tony.
Hard to add anything. I mean, the numbers, the record book entries speak for themselves, but obviously I think the back-to-back Wendell trays were one of the bigger moments. And then obviously, the inbound gaff where Isaac picks it up and hits the three, just what a body blow there as things are snowballing for Cleveland. And can't say enough about both of the big men, and specifically their 3-point shooting in game four.
It just popped in my head, but I'm noticing that like all these back-breaking moments are occurring when we do this in front of Cleveland's bench. It's something to just think about, because I mean there's so much shit talking between both sides. Like it is some high level trash talking. And for this game, we broke Cleveland. I don't know what's gonna happen in game five, but for this game, I felt like we broke them. Look, going back home changes a lot of things. Having much more playoff experience and history with the playoffs helps. But for this game four, we broke them, and we broke them officially 2.5 minutes into the fourth when we got that Mo Wagner just curl drive dagger hammer poster on Jared Allen that put us up 96-73. That was most likely the highlight of the game, was Mo doing that. And yeah, I mean, the rest of the game, it was just all about how much we'd win by, because there was 9:30 left in the game. And you knew at that point, being up 96-73, that we were winning. And we won 112-89. And Franz, He finished with 34 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists, no turnovers. He was 13 of 17 efficient shooting from the field, including 2 of 3 on threes. Franz is shooting the three ball well this series. You know, he's been just sneakily important in hitting those threes. He's at 39% for the series. Franz is the fifth NBA player since turnovers were first tracked in the 1977-78 season with 30-plus points, 10-plus rebounds, zero turnovers, and 75%-plus field goal percentage shooting in a playoff game. Franz is the first of the five to have done it since Charles Barkley in 1991, which is just absurd shit. Suggs had 12 points, Wendell 11, only 9 for Paolo, 4-14 shooting, but we didn't need him, but we will need him for game 5 for sure. Penny, are you concerned about Paolo's game 4 going into game 5? I'm not. Look, he's 21, he's young. It's not going to happen every single night, but he didn't have to do it because of what Franz was doing. And if anything, it's going to fuel him to do well in game 5. Like we're going to need Paolo in game 5. I'm not concerned after this game 4.
No concerns. And look, he's also a cerebral player too, who has shown the capacity to be able to take a backseat. Like Franz had it going, you know, specifically in the second half. So no concerns there. I think to your point, and also we mentioned the great ESPN article, like if anything, this should be a net positive that he's going to try and make up for it in game 5, where we will need one of his best efforts to win a pivotal game in Cleveland.
And then how about Markelle Fultz again, man? He backs up a decent game 3 with a 12-point game 4. You then had Jonathan Isaac anchoring our bench with 14 points on 4 of 6 threes. He hit some big threes in this game, plus 7 boards and 2 blocks. And then Mo Wagner, he had a calm 7 points, but it was more about the energy with them. We're going to need Mo to score double figures for game 5. And you know, I talked about basketball karma coming in, you know, after game 2 and coming into these games 3 and 4. And Cavs fans, you can take your Nazi bullshit and shove it up your asses, because I said basketball karma was going to come for you. It may not be us that delivers it, but it'd be great if we delivered it. And yeah, it's you could tell that those guys, if the whole team doesn't know, then the Wagner brothers definitely know, because there's a little extra oomph coming out of them for this. Even Franz, who he's technically the calmer brother of the two, but even Franz is kind of elevating it. And it's working out so far. We'll see how game 5 goes, but this is an intense series, and this is going to be great for us long-term one way or another. The Cavs, they won free throws and points in the paint, but we won second chance points 14-4. We had a 43-29 rebound advantage. Threes were big. Magic were 12-26. Cavs only 4-17. We didn't even let them attempt a lot. 17 three-point attempts is low for the Cavs. We continue praising the Paolo and Franz dynamic duo, because the last time Orlando had different players with consecutive 30-point games was May of 19. I'm assuming it's playoffs. Yeah, different. Yeah, it's got to be playoff games. But it was May 19th and 21st of 1996 against Jordan's Bulls, where Penny had 38 and then Shaq had 36. The Magic, they held Cleveland to 29 points during the second half of game 4, which tied a franchise playoff record for fewest points allowed in the second half. So again, that's big boy stuff. And Orlando also allowed 29 points to the Bulls on May 25th of 1996. So again, you got to go back to Shaq Penny days for such a great defensive second half. And then over the last decade, only 3 players have recorded a playoff game with 30-plus points, 10-plus rebounds, 0 turnovers, and a plus 25 plus minus, and 2 of them are Magic players. Both happened over these last 3 days, with Paolo on Thursday and Franz on Saturday. So again, that's pretty great for recent history. And the Magic are the first team to hold their opponent to less than 100 points in 4 consecutive playoff games since the Raptors did in 2019. I don't know if the Raptors did that to us in 2019 or a different team, but It might have been us. I don't know. But it marks the first time in franchise history also that Orlando has won consecutive playoff games by 20-plus points. And, yeah, I mean, momentum plays a big role. And hopefully we can ride into Game 5. The Magic also became the first team in NBA history to trail a series 0-2 and then win games 3 and 4 by a combined 60 plus points, which that's a staggering stat. But I don't know, man, I'm throwing a lot of stats out, Petty. A lot of it's a lot of history, and it's whatever happens the rest of this postseason, be it this series or beyond, like this is some big stuff for us.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of stat record stuff that you just threw out that's worth pondering and very interesting, but I'll take it back to officially now, by any metric, having won 2 games in the playoffs, this Magic team is the best Magic team since 2011. We have now surpassed every you know, Steve Clifford playoff era.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything since the tail end of great Dwight Howard days is unequivocal. So, you know, even before these 2 wins, this playoff entry was gravy, but now there's no debate here. We have won 2 games in the first round, and the series is still right here for the taking as well.
Yeah, we haven't won 2 playoff games in a series since 2011 when we lost to the Hawks 4-2. And I mean, you're right. This is the best Magic team since 2011. So it's official for sure. So now it's 2-2. We're heading back up to Cleveland. All the pressure's on the Cavs, right? I'm not exaggerating in saying that, right, Penny?
100%. And look, I mean, just look around online, look at the quotes. Like, all of the pressure's on Cleveland, and it's also on JB Bickerstaff, who may or may not have the full support and buy-in of all of his players right now, too. We don't know what'll happen, obviously, but it appears to be a potential mess here for the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, it's can we make them fold, or does it look like games 1 or 2 did? Like, that's the thing here. We still don't have an official start time for Game 5 on Tuesday, but we know it'll be on NBA TV and Bally Sports. We're doing this again Sunday night, but before Wolves Suns tip off, depending on if Phoenix gets swept or not, it's either going to be a 6:30 tip or an 8 p.m. tip. Penny, do you prefer 6:30 or 8 p.m. tip for Tuesday night?
I got nothing going on, so the earlier the better. No preference to me, but if we cut 90 minutes out of the anticipation of the game, I don't mind it. What about you?
6:30, because anything that makes it tougher for Cavs fans to get to the game on time, I think that helps. I think we tend to play better if it's 6:30 than if it would be 8. That's just kind of a gut feeling. I haven't looked at the stats on that, but well, obviously historically this season we play bad when we play at the half hour point. So maybe I should hope for 8, but I think 6:30. I think that I would prefer that, but whatever. Just hope for a good game Tuesday. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned kind of the desperation that Cleveland's feeling, because that's literally what Darius Garland said in the Game 4 post-game presser, where he says the Cavs are desperate now. And we're going to have to take that Game 5 still. Like, it's not going to be handed to us. There's a lot of pride at stake for those guys, no matter what type of, you know, tumult may be occurring within that Cavs franchise right now. But I said in the series preview that I felt there was a chance to get this Cavs team to fold. It's there. Like, it's very possible. The Cavs have all this pressure. Does Donovan Mitchell have another mass game in him? Sure, definitely, of course. But we made effective adjustments in Game 3 that carried over into Game 4. And you mentioned just JB Bickerstaff is on the chopping block, and it's on him and his coaching staff now to counter in Game 5, because I don't see us changing anything. So, you know, if you look at the playoff series as a whole, so through the 4 games, Mitchell's averaging 21 points per game this series, which that's lower than I thought he would average. Like, I will happily take 21 points per game from him right now. Jared Allen's averaging 17 and 14. Evan Mobley, 14 points. Darius Garland, 12. I can't complain too terribly with that core 4. And then looking at their bench, it's LeVert, Caris LeVert at eight. Do they change up their lineup and take Strus out? Because Max Strus is at 6 points per game. Penny, you think they switch it up starting lineup wise?
I have to imagine that they make some kind of move just based on the margin of defeat in game three and four, just something that denotes or connotes that they're making a move to try and shake things up and improve things. But I don't know where you go. Do you go to Okoro or LeVert? I mean, who I don't it's he doesn't have a lot of cards to play either, to be fair.
Well, I mean, you can't add like another big man. You're already pretty big, so you can't. So, like Tristan Thompson played late in game four, and he's a guy to keep an eye on for game five. He might get more minutes in game five. Marcus Morris is sitting there rotting on the bench. I'd rather him stay on the bench. Dean Wade's still out hurt, I believe. I don't think we see him this series unless I'm not aware of something injury report wise. Yeah, I think the move would be Okoro starts. I think that's the move they go with. I think they start Okoro because Strus just is not, thankfully, knock on wood, has not been playing as well as they were probably hoping he would play. And I think Okoro might be the move, but we'll see. Yeah, that's it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But and then from a Magic perspective, Franz is now slightly outscoring Paolo. Franz is averaging 21.5 points per game. Paolo, 21.3. Suggs is at 14.5 points per game. And then you got Jonathan Isaac at 8.8. Not counting Caleb Houston and Chuma in garbage time. Franz is at 39% shooting from three. Isaac's at 43%. They are only guys that are shooting above 35% from deep. And as a team, we're at 44% shooting from the field, 31% from three. So the three, it's not disastrous now. It's not great being 31%, but it's not disastrous. 72.5% shooting from the free throw line. You'd like to see that go up a bit more. The Cavs are averaging 91 points per game in this series. We're averaging just above 100 now. Cavs are at 91 points per game. It is like 90s, like late 90s basketball right now. They're at 43% shooting from the field, so a percent lower than us. Only 27% from 3-point range. That's 4% lower than us. And they're shooting 75% at the charity stripe, so about 2.5% better than us. Cleveland has that kind of scorching hot 3-point shooting night in them. And that's kind of the biggest concern I have for game five is they could just have a really, really great game five shooting the three ball, and there's not much we can do about it. But 4 games in, we're really keeping that in check. Like as kind of demoralizing a little bit as game one and game two might have been, the three ball isn't quite what really killed us. It was just us not scoring. And then in game three and four, our 3-point defense carried over, or at least the Cavs missing threes carried over, and we were just able to score more. I don't know. Do you have a bigger concern as we head into game five?
I think the biggest concern is the shooting. And if we start slow again, is it going to be harder to right the ship on the road than it has been at home? And obviously, we talked about Strus, Niang. If those minutes don't get cut, frankly, they're due to right the ship a little bit themselves in terms of, getting back to their averages over the course of the season. But you called it going into game two that it was not a must-win for the Magic. And I'm going to go ahead and plant the flag here now that I don't think game five is a must-win for the Magic to win the series either. There's two things, in my opinion, that are still to come in this series, and I hope we get a chance at both of them, but we definitely get this chance in game five, which is learning the lesson in desperation, right? Like it's technically you would consider it to be a must win for Cleveland just based on how things are going. So they've talked about they're going to come out desperate, and can the Magic match that intensity? And then the other lesson you hope the Magic get a chance to learn is a lesson in a closeout game. So it would be nice to win game five and to get that opportunity at home in game six to close out the Cavs. But you don't need game five. The good news is I think there's a lot of options left on the table for the Magic. You haven't had a world-beating Cole Anthony game off the bench. You could still get lucky with a 4 or 5 Trey Gary Harris night. Like there's options available for other guys to step up and carry a burden that gets you over the hump collectively to win a ball game still, which I think is great. But you should be playing extremely loose and confident going up to Cleveland for this next one.
Yeah, I agree. You don't need game 5. Obviously, for my Magic and 6 pick to happen, you know, we have to win game 5 and game 6, but I don't care about the prediction right now. We don't have to win game 5. The pressure's on Cleveland, though. You are right. Like, if we go down early, it's going to be harder to make a comeback because we're not in front of our fans. We're in front of kind of rabid Cleveland fans that are going to do their best to try and carry their Cavs team over the line. Like, they did their part in game 1 and 2. I don't see that subsiding much, if at all, for game 5. This is just a great, intense playoff series. And I think you're right. Like, one of Gary or Cole has to have a good shooting game. Like, I think game 4, Gary only had 1 3 that he made. Literally, he had 3 points in the game. Cole hasn't quite found himself yet. And if you're going to play those guys, one of Gary or Cole has to have like a 15 plus point game. Like, you need it. So, unless Paolo or Franz just has like a 40 plus point game, which that would be insane. And it's not fair to ask that of them, but it's possible. I'm not ruling that out. And that would just be insane to see. And yeah, that's all I got, Penny. I don't know. Anything else you're looking forward to, looking out for this game 5 coming up here Tuesday?
Yeah, I would just say we haven't seen the Magic have a good start in any of the games.
No.
I don't think that you could rule out the Magic having a great start to game 5 and Cleveland and their fans wilting. I think that's on the table too. So
yeah.
Look, from week to week in the playoffs, your fortunes can change mightily. We're here on the verge of getting swept. Now we're tied. And a week from now, we could be doing a pod, either packing our bags or going to the second round. And that's what's great about this time of year.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, playoffs in general are more fun when you're part of them. And yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. That's going to do it for this episode. If you're still listening, we thank you very much for your time. We are the longest running Magic podcast show in existence, so any added support is much appreciated. Subscribing, rating the show highly, positive comments, they all help this podcast ranking immensely. Tweet us any of your questions and feedback. Penny, what's your Twitter handle?
@ Spencer Strode.
No C's, just S's. And I'm @ Papa Giorgio MBO. And with that, take care. Let's go, Magic.